is March 21st. We're learning man and society. We are still in the middle of the. There's a few psukim talk about stealing, cheating, lying. The first thing any parshan wants to do with pasuk in Aleph is to explain what is the difference between geneva, hakhosha, or sheker. Right? It's interesting that, you know, that in the verbs, tiknohu, techachashu, techakru, but the nouns that they engender are all in different forms. Notice, it's not called genev, but it is called sheker. There are reasons for this in languages. Right? Notice that the term for, it's not kechesh or kichush, it's hakhosha. I'm not going to get into the, this is beyond a course like this, to describe why that happens to these three words, but there are relationships to these grammatical forms to the nature of the word itself. Okay? And perhaps even the culture that creates the language. Right? Okay? Alright, so we're up to below Tishav Ubi Shmi La Shoker Bechilalta Shem Elokecha Ani Hashem. If you swear in my name and it's a lie, you will make a chilul Hashem. Now, notice that in Aseres HaDibros, we have, in one form we have this word, in one form we have this word, Shav and Sheker. Shav and Sheker, while they appear to be synonymous, our pasuk is referring to Sheker, a specific form of the oath, which has a qualitative difference than swearing the Shav. And you should probably be able to figure out the difference just by translating the two words. Swearing lashov, shov means unnecessary, it's ridiculous, it's nonsensical. The types of shov is to swear that this is a chair, or to swear that this is an elephant. Right? You don't bring in God's name or something, unless it's extremely important. Right? That's shvuah shav. Shvuah sheker is to make yourself believable on something that the listener actually can't tell that it's. I mean, why would someone swear unnecessarily? Because they've gotten used to it.
Ibn Ezra, on the bottom of the page here, right, the bottom of this page, source number 30, explains why the emphasis of chilul Hashem.
Why didn't it say lo techachashu? Obviously, if you swear in God's name, again, it is a profanation of God's name. Here, but it's Ibn Ezra goes one step further to explain that in Aseres HaDibros, I wrote it down. Shmos Perkov Pasukov. It says ki lo yinake eis asher yisod shmo lashov. God will not absolve you if you bear His name falsely. Right. Or in vain, or with nonsensical. Because here is the point. Why would someone bring in God for something nonsensical? Ibn Ezra says, this is such an insight. He says, because he got used to it. Here's the point. When someone says, I swear to God, this is true. Ibn Ezra says, look him in the eye, he's lying. Tell me why. How does Ibn Ezra know that? Someone says, I swear to God, this is true. He's lying. Really? Everybody who says, I swear to God, is lying? Ah, maybe not. But why is Ibn Ezra calling this guy a liar? Yes.
He takes Hashem's name so easily.
Say more about this, please.
If it's true, it's not that it's hard to become.
Why are you bringing God into it? He thinks he's protesting too much. Get it? When he says, Hashomarochi, I know, just say, Bodhidati, I don't know where he is. Why are you saying more than you need to say? As soon as someone says more than they need to say, you know this guy. That's, by the way, he's bringing so much here. That's where Yosef tells the brothers, why did you go start telling me about your family? It seems to me that you're spies. I just asked you a simple question, what are you bringing me in all this other stuff? When the cop pulls you over, stop bringing over, I just said, I'm sorry.
It's a guilty conscience.
Stop bringing, yeah, because you show that you're guilty. So you're lying. Just keep it simple. Answer the question. Right? So when someone says, I swear to God, then you know that something's wrong there. Right? So it's sort of like when Reuven tells his father, if I don't bring Yosef back, you can kill my two sons. Now, it's not like he's saying, oh, if you lose a second child, you can console yourself by killing two grandchildren. Of course he doesn't mean that. He means to say, I'm so sure I'll bring him back that you can take my two sons. So I'll lose two sons like you. Right? That does not impress Yaakov at all. Because you take too much. You're showing that you're so ready to prove that you're right, that you're capable of bringing him back, that you're bringing in nonsense. That statement is shove. You get it? So it's Yehuda who says, listen, my brother is so sure, he says he'll kill his two sons who are not yet dead. Let me tell you why I'm a better person to rely on. Aaron lost two sons. I know what you're going through. I will not let you lose a second son. And Yehuda says, I can't be sure like him, but you're the believer. The one who brings in God all the time is the one who's not as convinced. So your answer says that it gets so commonplace to this person to bring in God, I swear to God, I swear to God, that if you admonish him and tell him, you know, this the Torah says you shouldn't swear in God's name. It's really something that's, you know, your word is your honor. Just tell me your word. You don't have to bring in God into it, right? You really should stop doing this. So you can enter right to this inside. He says, source number 30. He says, you know what the guy's probably going to say? You're right. I swear to God, I'll stop. He's so used to it. And why bring in God for shove? Because this is the way, you know. Remember, we did this last class with the Lindu Lashonam Davar Sheker. Remember? Behavior becomes habitual very easily. Right? Like the Gemara says, once you do something twice, the third time it's mutter. Okay. Alright, so in David Zvi Hoffman points out, and then let's move to Pasuk Gimel. Lo ta'ashok es reyacha v'lo tigzol. Do not oppress your reya. And we've already discussed the difference between geneva and gezela. Mm-hmm. Right? What do the Hebrew words mean? Geneva is, I think you can say it in English, is to steal from someone. Gezela is to rob someone. Can you see a qualitative difference between the two?
Yeah, secretly versus...
Right, so the Gadol pays a double fine. The Gazlan just pays back what he stole. Why the difference? So there's a nice drash in the Gemara in Baba Kama that says, yeah.
They got out of the fear of God and they have some.
Right, it has to do with fear of God. It has to do with the nature of the perpetrator of the crime. Right, got it? Shmuel David Butzato, Shadalo, I like to quote these contexts. Says there's also another qualitative difference from the standpoint of the victim. When a person's a victim of geneva, he doesn't really know what happened. Maybe does he doesn't even know if he should cancel his credit card. He doesn't know, did he lose it? Is it behind the bed? So it's very debilitating to him. This loss. And you can argue the other way. The Gaza, no, you're violent. Put a gun in your face. And you know, the Gaza didn't harm you personally. But at least the Gazlan, you know where your money is, you know who has it, you know what happened to it, you can take action against it, right? Right? So that's Tigzol. And incidentally, if you take out the concordance, you all know what a concordance is, right, guys?
Nope.
The alphabetical listing of all the words is not. Right? And you look under Gimel Zion Lamed, it's not limited to a Geneva situation. Right? So this could be this Gozel, in battle, would you say that if I grabbed your spear in battle that I stole it? I mean, you know, you ever see you go to the table and say, can I steal that ketchup, please? You ever see people say something stupid like that? You imagine it, right? You ever see people talk like that?
Well, when someone misspoke, they say, oh, I lied.
Yeah, I was about to say something. Yeah, that's also stupid. But the Tanakh does use the Shorish Gimel Zayin Mamet for grabbing something. Right? But it would never use Gimel Nun Vav to do that.
Okay, and
plus, you see, Gimel Nun Vav is not given to Cheshbon. Yaakov tells Laban, Gnuf Si Yom, Gnuf Si Laila, you stole from me here, you stole from me there. Can I show you on a piece of paper? No! Only Xayim I can show you on a piece of paper what you took from me. Xayim, I have no... Xayim is hidden. So what Shalom said was that... Ari said... I keep mixing it up. Why do I do this? Shalom. No, Shalom is... Shmuel. This is crazy. This is the problem when you know some kind of family. You know your father before you're born. Shmuel said it's from the standpoint of the perpetrator, right? But this interpretation says it's from the standpoint of the victim. Alright, Chamesh HaMitzvos Shem Piskazu. Look at source number 31. The five mitzvos. We have what? We have Tashok, oppress. Tigzol, we have from him. Lo Solin Pe'ulas Sochir Itcho Ad Boker. Don't let the wages of a worker sleep in your place overnight till the morning. Notice that the word tolin, this is my question number 32, how does Rashi understand lo tolin? It's not a poel yotze, but a poel omi. If it's a poel yotze, it looks like a transitive verb. It looks like a feminine. Right? In other words, it means the subject of lo tolin is not you shouldn't keep the wages of your worker overnight. No, it's lo tolin. Don't let the wages sleep in your possession overnight. Okay, so then it's grammatically wrong if it's talking about if you're the subject. There are other usages in both directions, but for us, it's just practically speaking, the mitzvah says the same: pay your workers on time. So that's 32, just a grammatical point. And it says lo tekalel cheresh, don't curse the deaf person. Lifnei iver lo sitei mechshol. We'll get to that in a minute. Don't put the stumbling block before the blind. So there are 5 points that are made in these two psukim. Don't oppress your reyah. Don't steal. Don't let the wages of your worker stay in your possession all night. Don't curse the cheresh. And don't put a stumbling block before the blind. So look at David Tzviachin, source number 31. Everybody together? Everybody have this? Because I have one or two extras in here. Chamesh HaMitzvot Sheva Piskazu. Motzaos es nimukon b'milos hasiyum v'yareisa. These five belong in one unit. How do you know? Because look at Pasuk Beis and v'chilalto es Shem Elokecha ani Hashem. Right? This seems to be like a unit. Don't do this, 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 and this, and this. V'yareisa me'elokecha ani Hashem. You agree? Right? So Pasuk Gimel Nidal stands as a unit, that these things are meant to be observed with the fear of Hashem. What do they all have in common? That you should say not just Ani Hashem Elokeichem, like it often says in this parsha, but to be erased from Elokeich Ani Hashem, because all five of these are usually done to weaker people. Here it is. Geneva is usually done to rich and stronger people. That's why I'm not confronting you. Gezela is usually performed on a weaker person. I'm not going to gozel from a person twice my strength. Following? So, lo tashok, we oppress the people we feel we're going to get away with. Yeah? So, oshek, gezel, get it now? Pulat sochir, the worker's wages. These are people dependent. Right? These are weaker people. The cheresh, the iver. All five of them, let it be known that in this society,
It is not like you see in one of the opinions of virtue in Plato's Republic, the opinions and the desires of the stronger. Under other, this Torah wants to establish that we want concern not only from the king. Hammurabi also wanted to take care of the weak ones. But if you read in his introduction, he says, you know who takes care of the weak ones? Me, alone. I do. Alone. I don't want people looking after each other. I want everyone to be beholden to me.
That's what the monarchy was. Like, they would take care of the weak, they would take care of the poor. Supposedly, when the American government started, that's why they won. The tax base came into effect because the people would take care of each other, because the government had to do it.
Right. So now, that's
so charitable works along
now because of that. Okay, so that's what David Solomon says, these haven't come. Okay? Got it? Lefihem nesru kan ma'asim she'osim osam ein aleihem pachat shel shofet bosor vadom. That when people oppress these five, they have no compunction, they don't feel that anyone is going to cause them to pay for this. He's going to protect this person. Sometimes it go over. I know a person at 3 o'clock in the morning, he drove into a parking lot of a large department store, and stupid, he parked in a disability spot. He got it's a big ticket. I know the police car was at least a $350 ticket. I mean, come on, there was no one shopping at that hour, it was just a stupid thing for him to do. It was the closest spot, and he took it. And in a 24-hour, place, because, so this country wants to really protect the disabled. Right? So you park in one of those spots, there's a wheelchair on, Right? Yeah. Anyway, so here's the Torah's way of saying, listen, the Shabbat wants not, he's not just the protector of the weak. He wants you to be the protector of the weak. And if you're not, Yireisim Elokecha. If someone, you may not get hit by Basar Wadam, right, for this, right, but you get hit by me. Yireisim Elokecha. Okay, next part, next Inyan.
Did we talk about 30, why the emphasis on Goloshim?
Yes, because it becomes so habitual. Chilul is like cholid, chav. It happens so often, so it becomes like so commonplace. So the oath in God's name should be so rare and so unusual that it makes you shivering. It's sort of a lahavdil, if I may say, like the people who feared. He whose name shall not be mentioned in the Harry Potter series.
Right.
Remember? But some people were Adarabha. They said, no, why should I fear saying his name? Okay. Okay, we're up to number 33. Explain the apparent inconsistency between our pasuk that says, don't let the wages stay with you till the morning, and Dvarim Perikov Dal Pasuk as well. Look at number 33. Look at this pasuk. It seems to be a flagrant contradiction. Biomoti tain scharo v'lo tavo olav hashemesh. It says, make sure to pay your worker before the sun sets. And our pasuk says, make sure to pay your worker before the sun rises, before the boker.
It was this little tell-in,
Don't let the wages sleep with you till the morning, which means
that you get them. Don't let them sleep, and you get rid of them
before the morning starts. Pay him. You have all night to pay him
before
morning.
Don't let them sleep with you.
No. Ad boker means ad gachal till the morning. Don't let the morning pass. Right. And then one says ad hashemesh. Shemesh always means sunset. Kivoha Shemesh. I mean, there's a Gemara in the beginning of Brachas that discusses this possibility. Tosfos actually rejects the possibility that the Gemara meant
maybe it means sunrise. No, but Bo HaShemesh always means sunset, like Yaakov. But Vayolad Shom Ki Bo HaShemesh, you go to sleep because the sun was rising. Yimizrach Shemesh Va'ad Mevo'o, got it? Zarach is always sunrise, right? Like Mizrach is east because of that, right? So Mizrach Ad Mevo'o, until it sets. So when it says Titein Tzcharo V'lo Tavo Alav HaShemesh, means don't let the sun set on him. And our pasuk is saying pay him before the sun rises. So which is which? So Rashi on.
Can't just say it's two different workers.
Yep, that's exactly. Okay, look at Rashi on Poker. Here. B'schir yoma kasuv medaber. She yitzi aso mi she shaka chama. V'fichach zman gavu yischaro kol alayla. U'v'makom acher hu omer v'lo tavo alav ha-shemesh medaber b'schir layla. Shashlomas Pulasov Vishalam the Shahar Vifach Zman Gavuish Scharo Kolayum. Vishit Nator Nasana Torah Zman the Baal Habayas Omnal Vakesh Mahus. You have a 12-hour period to pay. Now you can always make a different stipulation. But unless otherwise stipulated, you must pay your worker if he works by day before the next morning. And if he works at night, before the next evening. Right? That's the difference. Okay? And you're right. It's talking about two different types of workers. Again, if you have a stipulation, I'll pay you every 2 weeks, every month, or whatever, that is fine. But absent that stipulation, if a person does not pay his worker within the next 12 hours after he finishes working, whatever, you have violated this mitzvah. Obviously, anytime someone works for you, right? Anytime someone works for you, there must be a stipulation of how that person is getting paid. Don't make any mistakes about that. Don't make any assumptions. Right? So that whether it's a babysitting job or shoveling snow or whatever it is, you should pay that person immediately upon the conclusion of the services that, or and you have before violating this law. Until either the next morning or the next evening.
Unless
it's a stipulation. Yeah, you can stipulate anything. There's a guy who famous Gemara in Shabbos about Kuntav Zion, the guy who got paid every year, Erev Yom Kippur. And so, you know, depends on the stipulation. Okay, now let's get into certainly our biggest tangent to date, which is how to understand Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Hashar. It's really a beautiful treatment in the Torah Tzmini. Actually, it says, how should we understand Lo Sekalel Chirish? Don't curse the deaf? Huh? Am I allowed to curse someone who can hear? So obviously, what's the basic underlying point, which David Tzvi Hoffman already made? Why does it say don't curse the deaf?
God's got your back.
He can't hear you, so he doesn't know you're cursing him. Right? So is Rashi saying that means you're allowed to curse people who can hear? Of course not. So just, wait, are you allowed to put a stumbling block before someone who can see? I mean, is this really limited, this pasuk, to someone's walking with a cane and he puts a stumbling block right in front of him? Come on! What kind of rush are we talking about? Obviously, we're not talking about a person who's actually blind, nor are we talking about a person who's actually deaf. We're talking about someone who is not aware of what you're doing. Type of lush horror, but you're putting a whammy on him, and he can't even defend himself because he's not up to it. So too, the guy asks you, "Is there open side today?" And he wanted to get a ticket. So is this where I can wait for this line? Is this where I can wait for this bus? And you just but what? That's also pretty rush, right? No, but we're putting people on sending people on false, it's called the wild goose chase, things like that. Don't put this stumbling block before the blind. It's interesting, just to tell you a fascinating thing. There's a Gemara that talks about the kutim who are liable to cause us to violate a mitzvah. Right? So the Gemara says, but don't the kutim keep the mitzvahs themselves? Doesn't it say lifnei iver lo siten hashar? So remember, the kutim reject Torah Shabbat, right? So to Akuti, the mitzvah is limited to putting a stumbling block before a person is blind. They don't have a Torah Shabbat, Do you need Torah Shabbat Peh to know that this is figurative? We came across this already. There were two figurative statements, remember, between the Rambam and the Rider. Two figurative points about the guy who steals underground into someone else's house. Remember that? In Zohar HaShemesh, where the Rambam said, it's the same rule by day and by night. The question is, how sure are you about the intentions of the man who's coming into your house? The burden is, of course, on him, right? But if you know he's not going to kill you, because he's your father or whatever, if you know he's not going to kill you, you can't take his life. Yeshlo done it, right? Okay, that was one of them. Okay, the other one was Eino Damim or not. Who's Damim are we talking about? So is it figurative? Or is it real? The Rambam says, no. Is it to cut the difference between day and night? In daytime, you can't kill someone who breaks into your house. You can't assume he's looking for a confrontation or ready for a confrontation. So they take day and night literally. So too in our pasuk, the Tzedukim seem to, the Kutim seem to take Chayrish and either literally. But we say, no, we're talking about people who are just not knowledgeable about this thing. Yes?
Wouldn't it be the opposite? The guy that comes in the day has more swear that he's looking for a conflict, especially people that are up coming at night, chest or that he's
asleep. The Gemara considers the following. And okay, that's just the Kash on the right.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But the Gemara assumed the following, that Sheet in the Gemara, is that at night you know someone's home. If while you're stealing those cups from the brick front, those silver cups, one breaks or something, and he's going to crash, and the guy upstairs is going to hear, what's going on? Hey, honey, what's going on downstairs? Well, go get your shotgun. Come on, let's see what's going on. You're not going to stand by and... The Chiddush of Ein Odom, if you recall, was that you can even kill Mashas, and you haven't violated the Tolda of Shita by taking a human life, because he was already dead. Ein Odom. Right? Or I imagine if you took an oath. I wonder about this one. You took an oath that I will not draw blood on anybody. You took a neder. You made a shvua. I'm not going to draw blood. And you shoot the guy's head off. And blood spills all over the place. That wasn't blood. The Torah says, Eino Damim. That guy doesn't have blood. That's not blood. That's something else. It's a dye. It's a red sketch. No, because the Torah said, Eino Damim. According to that, you understand? It's metaphor that,
yeah.
It's the same thing as, let's say, a little butter slips into your chalent and it's bottled with shishim. If you eat the whole thing, of course you ate lumpy meat. It was a macholot, absolutely. But it was one part butter, 2,200 parts chalent, so the halacha says, I can eat that. You know what I'm saying? So the doctor will say, yeah, there's blood all over the wall. I can picture, making a long disargument, No, that's not blood. That's what we're talking about. That's the Torah said Eino Damim. So it's sort of like a joke about the yeshiva bachurim who made a very lundish sukkah, with just a little wall there and a dofen akuma here and a tzuras pesach there, and they brought in all of their silver and everything into the sukkah. Like the Gemara says, you should bring your fine kalim, and someone came in and stole everything. How did they get in? A glacier cup. How did they get in? This wall is actually considered closed, and this is considered closed, and that's considered. The halacha creates certain, dynamic interpretations.
We'll think that later.
Right. Okay, you have questions?
No, I'm just saying, you also say that's not true. Not that you don't see that it's not a dog at all. I should say that the Torah was Mechaya in such a case, right?
That's a different interpretation. Eino Damim means you have no blood on your hands if you kill it. Right. Of course, that's blood on your hands is a metaphor for killing,
I say unjust
killing. You wouldn't say that if you killed someone in battle, you have blood on your hands. Right?
I mean, also, let's say, for example, if somebody else would come to kill a third person. Do we say that Shabbat is not at all? I mean, so what does it
mean? Yeah,
Shabbat
is
that if you, if, for you,
that might someone's coming to kill you, I have to kill him too. That's a pasuk coming up, it's called Osama Lo Namreha. It's interesting because there are three different limudim in the Torah for that point. Habalah Hargachash Gim Vahargevi. Right? And
And we'll see that they're, one of them teaches that you have a chiyuv to save you, you know, save someone else. Okay, so that answers question number 34. Chayrish, we're talking about here, like the Iver, is an unsavvy person who's not aware of what you're doing.
Mark, you mean both? You couldn't learn that from
one is by words. Remember, the people then were very superstitious about people cursing them. That's why Bilam was so, was such a... I think we talked about this when we spoke to him about, you know, Bilam was a... He was just a good actuary. He knew which side to take, and he knew what how to curse someone. And he was always on the winning side, right? So he had a good reputation. He could charge whatever he wants.
Psychologically, having him on your side could make you do better, because you would hit you like,
oh, yeah, absolutely. And it would ruin the other side.
Psychological warfare.
I'm not saying every time. When the Jews would take the Aron to battle, it usually psyched out the other side. But, you know, when the Plishtim, when Bnei Eli took it, it was so evil, it didn't do any good for them. And the Plishtim, you know, raised their spirits and took it. Okay. All right, let's look at some halachic parameters of Lifnei Iver. Source number 36. Okay, there's some really fascinating differences. And actually, on page 9, I have some English examples of this. Okay. Right, let's take a look on source 36 on page 8. Look in the Gemara. You see this? You all know how the Torah schema works, right? You have the text of the Chumash, Unculus and Rashi. Then you have a series of Gemaras that quote the pasuk that we're dealing with, and then explanations of those Gemaras. Okay, the Torah schema lived here in the United States until the mid 30s. He went back and forth to Europe. Then he passed away before the war. And he was the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, the Baruch HaLevi Epstein was his name. His father was Rav Aaron HaLevi Epstein. Okay. It says, V'lifnei Iver Tanya. Come on with me. Top line. Okay. Rav Nosson Omer, Minayin Shelo Yoshit Adam Kos Yayin Menazir Ve'eber Menachai Leben Noach. Tamud Lama V'lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mechshol. What's the chiddush of this source? How do you know you shouldn't give a wine to a Nazir or Eber Menachai to a... to a Ben Noach. So what's the chiddush here? Hello, guys. Applies even to? To non-Jews. In other words, I non-Jews are supposed to keep mitzvahs. Seven mitzvahs Ben Noach. If a non-Jew worships the Avodah Zarah because of something I did, I'm violating my Torah. I put a stumbling block before the blind. Right? It's a lot, the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah is on this very topic. But not having business dealings with Gentiles right before their holidays. Whether today's Gentiles are considered that or not, that's a debate. But
that is Christmas shopping? Like, if you shop before Christmas, that like helps?
And so now we say it's on the very day itself, but even today we don't say that today's, whether it's Christianity or Zohar to begin with, is questionable. But the point of the chiddush of this is that this applies even to a Ben Noah, of course. Is this stumbling block for him too? Okay. That's what we're afraid that if we have business deals with them on their holidays or right before their holiday, they may thank their God for this gift or this business deal. And then we are the impetus for them to be violating their mitzvah. Okay? From here? Notice it also, the example for the Jew is also not a usual example. It could have just said, I know you shouldn't give a piece of pork to a Jew telling him it's veal. You know what I'm saying? So obviously, but this case is so ridiculous. Who's going to find the case of Ben Noah? Right, let's look on. V'lifnei Iver lo sitei mechshol, got it, Tanya. Remez letzion kvoros min haTorah minayin, amar Abaye v'lifnei Iver lo sitei mechshol. Ah. Why do we have to put up a tombstone when someone is buried? Because of Lifnei Iver. How?
Kohanim,
of course. Because if a Kohen should tread upon this area, he will have a mechshol. He doesn't even know. And he's going to go into the base of Mikdash, and he's going to have all kinds of hurt because you didn't put up a tombstone. Now, today, when people are buried in cordoned off areas called cemeteries,
talking about a time we used to bury your dead in the backyard or something. You know, so, but today it's not. Yeah, there are other reasons for putting up a tombstone. Next, b'fnei iver, tanya, b'fnei iver lo sitein mechol, b'makelit no hagadol hakasuv medaber. If someone beats his adult son, meaning he's over 13 years old, and he slaps him and he hits him, he's over on the fever. Tell me why.
He'll hit him back.
He'll be over on his Torah. And if he draws blood, you were the impetus for your son to be chayav misa. Okay? You see that there's like a trend going on. There's a very different types of fever going on. Let's go on, let's see. Because the first case, let's try to figure it out now. The first case involved like deception, right? I was deceiving you. That's the one where I gave the Nazir a cup of wine.
Yeah.
Assuming that I know a Nazir is not supposed to have wine, right? Do you mind the sound there? Tziun Kvaros, is that, am I deceiving the Kohen? Not that we call that deception, would you?
Seems more like lazy.
It's passive.
Even in a passive manner, be involved in this. What about the third one, the son? I'm certainly not deceiving him. I'm trying to discipline him. But what am I doing? I'm provoking him. You see it? I'm not deceiving him. He knows what I'm doing. I'm trying to convince him to stop stealing or cheating or drinking or, you know what I'm saying?
Which one was the passive?
That's the tzimut chorus. He's not deceiving, really. He's certainly not provoking the Kohen. He's just passively engaged in the Kohen making a mistake. Okay. What about, let's skip two of them. Look at the Lifnei Iver. It says, Hamal v'beribis v'halobet over in Shneem Yishuv Lifnei Iver lo sitein mechol. That's even the Gemara says, even the guarantor, the scribe, the borrower, the lender, they're all over on Lifnei Iver lo sitein mechol. Why is the guarantor also over? They're not deceiving anybody. And they're not provoking either. No one provoked you to charge the interest, nor to pay the interest. I came to you in a second, you lent me $1,000. You say, sure, you're going to pay me back $1,100 in 6 months, right? I said, okay, fine. I get the guarantor, I get the scribe. I know interest is forbidden, but I need the money. I'm going to get killed otherwise. Right? The only way to get money to pay off this loan shark is to borrow it on interest from another Jew. Right? So where's the Lifnei Iver? Isn't Lifnei Iver either a provocation or a deception? This is a big chiddush. The answer is, even the just the participation in an illegal act could be Lifnei Iver. Because without the guarantor, I wouldn't make this loan. Without the scribe, I couldn't have this loan. Fine. Without the borrower, I wouldn't have a lender. Without the lender, I wouldn't have a borrower. Okay, look at the next one. Says Lifnei Iver, Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Kol Hamalvim Maos Shalom Be'edim Over Mishum Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechol. If you lend money without witnesses, you are violating Lifnei Iver. How? Oh, Shkoyah. Okay, and this bill is done. Shkoyah. Okay. case of lending without witnesses. This is a classical case, like, you know, teacher puts the test on the table and then walks out for 5 minutes. Come on, what are you doing?
You're inviting them to be dishonest.
So I think that's a provocation. It's not deception, maybe, but it's provocation.
For a teacher that does that, you think that's wrong? Let's say a teacher says, I had a rabbi who we were sitting in tables, not desks, literally chair by chair. He'd hand us the exams and then walk out and be like, I trust you guys.
His neighbor.
Definitely. You want to tell him?
You're in the school?
No, back home in high school.
I went to a real high school. Back in the 70s, boy. All right, so look at the next page, and you see, again, it's right here. You see, this is from Nechama Leibowitz's studies in the Parsha. Look at the five, you see five numbers there? 1, 2, 3, 4, and then to the right is 5. Minayin shelo yoshit adam kos yayin v'nozi v'ibib v'nachay v'nim v'noach. That's deception, but no provocation. I'm not provoking you. You don't have to drink this. Maybe, I don't know, if I give wine to anybody, maybe that's a provocation. Maybe. If I put a ring ding on your desk, is that a provocation? How do you get no ring dings on? I don't know. All right, so the second one is Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol V'Makev Livno HaGadol HaKasim Medaber. Because here I'm provoking my son. Provoking him to hit back. Yes?
Can you explain the lender and the borrower?
Because if I lend and
usually that last one is including guarantee.
The very last one is lending without witnesses, because I'm provoking him to deny it.
But the low end,
yeah, that was the fourth one. The fifth one on this, but it's not the same order, by the way, on the next page. When I lend someone without witnesses, I am provoking him to deny it.
I feel like expecting the worst.
Well, not only am I provoking him, he may just forget, you know, and then he's going to be sinning when he denies it. You should at least record it. As my father often says, so this is saying, the shortest pencil is longer than the longest memory. Anyway, but that's what you have here. You have the provocation, if you beat the child, right? In the case of lending money on interest, the borrower, the lender, the scribe, the guarantor, the ari, the kaplan, everybody, they're all engaging in an illicit act. See, no deception, no provocation. We all know what we're doing, right? And even the fourth case, when I leave the papers on the table, or if I look, it could be the teacher knows his students so well. Why even, you know, raise the possibility? Plus, when I lend without witnesses, there's no deception, there's no provocation for sure, and there's no participation in an illicit act to lend someone without witnesses. But a temptation is aroused. I'm not provoking him to forget. When he lends it, when he borrows it, I'm saying he intends to pay it back, right? But you're giving him the temptation sometime down the line, without even realizing it, there could be a violation there, and then total passivity with the case of the matzeva. Yes.
How do you understand the illicit act without any temptation or deception being placed in a stumbling block?
We could try to figure some other examples of this, but the illicit act is that here it's obviously worse than lending without witnesses, because
you're not deceiving, you're not putting something back on anyone.
So the answer is because each one of these four were necessary for this dead thing to take place. Without you, this thing couldn't take place.
This is therefore the language of Mosite and Machal.
Yeah, it's more like this. A Messiah day over a vera, but that's exactly how it is. Right? Am I Messiah day over a vera is a type of lifnei iver? Right? So let me just qualify this point with a few halachic, interesting halachic issues.
One is that the mitzvah we're talking about is a Torah law, right? But this is an interesting thing. The rabbis, the rabbans, say, or maybe even a Torah law, that it's a, if you put a mitzvah to violate the rabbanim, that's also a violation of Torah. What mitzvah are you talking about? What if the thing I gave you was not Abraham and Achai to a goy or wine to a nazir, but something that's only us in the rabbanim? I gave you a chicken and cheese sandwich, and I said it's fish, or I said it's soy. Am I also violating this thing that looks like Nick Hachon?
Yeah.
It's not so pashut, because maybe I violated the thing that looks like Nick Hachon with your rabbanim. You understand? The rabbis say, don't violate. It's the same question of Chayat Tuchtichas Amistacha. Do I have to rebuke you on Drabans, or do I only have to rebuke you on things that are in the rest of this book that has this pasuk in it? Okay, Tosus and Brachas discusses this when it says that we learn that you should rebuke people from the way that Eli talked to Chana when she appeared to be drunk praying while she was praying. So Tosus says, we talk about the Gemara says, here we see that you should rebuke someone who's doing something wrong. Tosus says, no, of course you have to rebuke. He says, okay, I'm doing it myself. He says, yeah, you might have thought that that's only on a Torah law, so come on, comes this possible, but you need to teach that in your Rabbanon, you have to rebuke people on rabbinic laws. But that you could be sure that there are many Rishonim who say that, no, it doesn't matter what kind of mishol it is, even a minog, even a small little, anything, if you're the impetus, whether because you provoked him, you deceived him, you tempted him, right? You even in passive, it's a real burden, but now we're all equipped to really know the full parameters of Lifnei Iver. Okay? Everyone good? Alright, moving on. Pasuk Tezvav says, Lo ta'asu ovel ba'mishpat, lo tisok negov, lo sedar negodol, betzedek tishpot ha'misach. What a pasuk. Now notice that it says, Lo ta'asu ovel ba'mishpat. Look at Rashi on this pasuk. Malamed shahadayon hamakalkelas adin karui ovel sonui umishukatz chirem betoeva. I love this Rashi. Sha ovel karui toeva shnemar tovas Hashem kolose ovel. Do not make an avla. You're an avla. So, right.
That's
good.
I don't know
that.
Yeah.
Lo ta'asu ovel means don't make, and then Rashi gives five different interpretations of what this word means. Despicable, disgusting. So here's the shot that some of Farshim gave, why Rashi is going so much out of his way. See what I wrote, number 37? Lo tasu ovel, as opposed to lo, followed by a verb which itself has the connotation of ovel. You understand what I'm saying? Why didn't it say lo ta'avel as hamishpat? Because if you pervert justice, you become pervert. Get it? That's why it says lo ta'asu ovel. It's a drash. It's like a, almost sounds Hasidish. Don't make an ovel. Because otherwise the Torah should have saved the word. Just use lo, followed by a verb that's of the shorish, ayin vav lamed. Lo ta'avel mishpat. Right? What's lo ta'asu ovel ba mishpat? Surely the Bible could have come up with a good verb there. So instead, Rashi says you become that. Right? Sounds like a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Vayelecha acharei ha-hevel, vayehebolu. They went after hevel, and they became hevel. Right? You make an avla mishpat, you become avla. Cherem, toeva, mishukat, salui. Okay. When it says, lo tisot p'nei dol, lo sedar p'nei gadol, so this came up when we did mishpat here. Don't favor the poor, don't favor the rich, don't favor the small, don't favor the big. Favor the right, the one who's right. We're talking in court right here, of course. We're talking in Mishpat. So remember that a week ago I explained the pasuk that the Gemara in Kulin and Yerushalmi at the end of the Sefer Demai that says, Ani Barosh Hatzdiku, not Demai Lepeya. Ani Barosh Hatzdiku. Right? So the Gemara asks, what are you talking about? Where? In court? It says, Lo Seder Abnego. Our pasuk. Right? Now let me favor the poor guy and say, oh, what a shame. You know, that rich guy has different stuff anyway. Let me just favor the poor guy, and this will be the rich guy's stuff. Let him get it, but, you know, the nachas in court. No! You're making an offer. Right? You got it? So what does Amiba Rosh Hatzdiku mean? Remember how we explained it? Remember that if there's a question of payer, and leket, and shikha, if there's a suffix, usually we shall keep a mon because it's maris. Keep money in its last known owner. It's my food. If the ani wants to prove that it fell to the ground after the worker, right, let him prove it. So here we say ani barash atziku. Let's be mastic the poor guy and give him the.
I don't know. It's off topic as far as like an abla. Like, what about when like someone he buys like purchases a certain mitzvah all every year, let's say, and everyone knows he's going to purchase mitzvah, so people bid just to, like continue having him raise higher and higher and higher and more and more.
Let's see how much he wants the mitzvah. I don't know.
So it's not more of like an abla. Like,
yeah. Depends on the mitzvah. Okay. The Gemara in Maseches Arachin talks about the extra value to Hekdesh to make the thing more expensive for the sake of Hekdesh. If a regular person has quoted something, he doesn't have to pay the Chomesh, fine, but if the original owner does, he does have to pay the fine, so Hekdesh prefers that the original owner pay the fine. Anyway, so look at the end of the pasuk. It says, "Betzedek tishpot amisecha." What makes Rashi take these three words to mean? Take parshanut now. It's a beautiful drash, and I actually have quite a bit of. And always this. What a coincidence! This touches upon what I told you before, but the guy who got paid once a year. This is the Gemara, page 10. Rashi says, "Have donis kol adam kaschus." How did Rashi derive this from the words "Betzedek tishpot amisecha"? Tishpot amisecha. Betzedek tishpot amisecha. Look at Rashi. Anyone have it? Kimashmao. Right. Kimashmao means like the mashmaot of the words. What's the problem that made Rashi give a second perush, though? Look at the whole pasuk. Look at the entirety of this pasuk. It's horribly redundant. You just told me, don't make an avla at Mishpat. You just told me not to favor the Gadol. Not to favor the Gadol. So, according to a Rashbam kind of perush, it doesn't mind this kind of repetition. It says, because if you do that, you will be doing tzedek tishpot amisecha. But to Rashi, tzedek tishpot amisecha has to add something that I don't already know from this person. You with me? So comes Rashi to tell us, you get it? Tzedek tishpot amisecha. Have don is called ha'odam v'kavsus means, in the courtroom of your mind, while I am contemplating why you did what you just did, I'm going to judge you favorably. And that is a din in v'ahavta kamocha, because we always judge ourselves favorably, make excuses for ourselves, because I know why I came late, I know why I disappointed you, I know why, so I make excuses for myself, right? So we should make excuses for other people, right? It's interesting. The concept of Marasayan, you're familiar with it?
Yeah.
The concept of Marasayan proves that we don't have to judge people because chus, that they will judge us because chus. In fact, not allowed to. Okay, the same? Okay, but, hey, you're doing something that looks very questionable. Why should I worry? People will judge me because chus.
It's also cognitive behavior in the sense.
Yes, exactly. Don't be the impetus where people will speak Lashonara. I say in the manner of a Musser. The best thing to do about doing something like that is to live a life whereby if someone would say those things about you, no one would believe it. Right? But still, people love to hear those things point is that Rashi learned derived the Bar Acher Hevedonis called Damakaskos, which is a mission in Pirkei Avos, right? Notice also, very important, that the statement is not Hevedon es kol Odom Lakaskos. Judge every man favorably. No, we are not commanded to judge every man favorably. Look at the pasuk and prove it. What did the pasuk say? It said it tishpot. Not everyone is your amitah, right? Okay, not everybody deserves to be judged. You can, by the dint of your actions, remove yourself from this corpus of those who deserve to be judged. Right? You don't sure deserve it. It says every don is called ha adam. Doesn't it? Don is called adam. Every man. Don is called ha adam. The entirety of the man. Judge him b'kasos. Get it? And since you don't know the whole man, you don't know what his troubles are, you don't know what existential problems he has, you only know that about yourself. So it's a din in the way you judge yourself, judge him. But since you don't know his whole individual status and the corpus of his entirety of his being, it's better just probably not to judge at all. Or to judge him favorably. Tzedek, right? Say that he's right. Okay, that's why the reason why Rashi Darshan, that's the answer to the top question, right, is this point. Have you done this called Namaskaskus? I'm giving you an assignment. I'm not going to do this inside, but sort of on page 10 is a whole series of people who judge the Kaskus. Here's your assignment. All of the examples fall under two categories. All the examples on Shabbos HaKukhov Zayin fall under two categories of Kapschus. You can probably guess them. Why these two categories? It's not like someone came to Shul and didn't put on tefillin, so how did you judge the person? Look at the examples on that page of Gemara. Look at all the number of examples throughout that page. Right? It's very easy to read. Very easy. It's all in Hebrew and it's all very easy. You need to go look at the language of that. But they all fall into two categories, which is fits in so well with the two main points of Parshas Kedoshim, actually. The Rambam is very big on these two aveiros, and we really have to be very careful when two things. I would say that like the Torah gives us safeguards on arayos. It's called yichud, right? But I think that it should be a good rule never to have yichud with another man's wife, nor with another man's money, right? Okay, you'll get the two examples. Okay.